one of the early proponents of the Back to the Land movement, Paul Joseph. Good morning and welcome.
Morning, Jo.
An Aquarian and former health worker and social worker, Julie Hornibrook. Hello.
Hello, Jo.
I wanted to play a little bit of audio of the time. I've been playing archive, some of that archival material that the ABC has in its vaults is really fabulous. But before I do that, Julie, can I just get you to tell us a little bit about how you came to be at Aquarius in 1973?
Yeah, sure. I was a social work student at the time, and we heard about the festival, and I think probably fairly spontaneously a group of us jumped into the old Ford Falcon that I had at the time, and we headed up north and set up camp and, you know, enjoyed the festival and I guess the existential aspect of it at the time. It's only in later years that you look back and see some of that legacy and the way that it influenced my own life and my return back up here. But I went back to finish my university studies and then travelled and then came back and worked here and then left again and came back to have my family.
So you went to uni in the city. Did you grow up in the city?
I came from Brisbane, actually, and then to... it was the days where you could get a Commonwealth
Brisbane
scholarship.
Brisbane wasn't really the city in the 70s, was it?
I moved to Sydney, and, you know, I think an aspect of that time was that we had access to free education, which also influenced our sense of confidence and adventure that we were able to bring to the festival. And, you know, it was part of those times where you felt you could challenge the status quo, you were challenging the values of your parents' generation and had that confidence to do things differently, which we certainly explored and have done.
Mm. And of course, Paul, we did play a beautiful story that was put together by some of our ABC Open producers about you to kick off our coverage 2 weeks ago. And you were already here living in the Northern Rivers when the Aquarius Festival organisers, Johnny Allen and Graham Dunstan, came to you with their idea. Tell us, how did you come to be here? Because you had a burgeoning career as an actor, having just, you know, left the cast of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, I'd lived in the bush before I got that job, and I realised when I was in that job after about 9 months, I really longed to be back in the bush, and I've never really lived in the city again since that time. And I think that was more important to me than any career, really. I've had an interesting life as a song man, which is something I think pretty precious. It's not something I've made any money at all out of, but I've been able to use my music within my community for gathering, for remembering, for in ways that ancient song people carried the stories and the messages. And to me, it's a thrill that community is that alive, that those old ancient type of skills are still accessible. These days I sing mostly at environment benefits or at funerals.
And it strikes me too that it's a decision that many people make, whether they regard themselves as hippies or not, if they want to live out of the city and they've come from the city, or if they've had an education in a career that means that they're going to flourish financially if they're in a city and not so much if they're in a country. There are sacrifices that you make, aren't there?
Decisions, yeah, choices that sometimes we can recognise our wealth comes in other ways, and our time is much more valuable than our money.
Mm. Well, let's have a listen to some of this archival stuff from our vault.
It's not about music, it's not about culture, in the same way the Adelaide Arts Festival is. It's about being in a community, it's about lifestyles.
So if the festival succeeds, what do you think it will have proved?
I don't know how to judge the success of the festival, in this sense. Because the festival is so many things to so many different people. If we survive, in the sense, if it works in such a way that we don't pollute the creek, we don't have major outbreaks of diseases, we don't have fights and those sorts of things, if it comes together a community, which is the feeling in the town right now, it's really soft and gentle, and you go down and sit at someone's campfire and talk to them, they're very open. sort of thing. Well, that's what it's about, you know, that we can do things without having to have entrepreneurs to tell us how to do it. Society could be restructured and it could work in a completely different way. And of course that's a sign of hope, because given the nature of the disasters that face mankind, ecologically and through such incredible violence implied by, you know, factory owners poisoning the air and water, and people like Nixon sending B-52s as a Christmas present to Hanoi, that sort of out of control technology, then if you can get together in large numbers of 5,000 and exist, you know, with gentleness and love, and it works, well, Christ, it's a sign that we may well survive the century. When it was surrounded in gloom.
That was a very young Graham Dunstan, filmed for GTK. It's black and white vision. It shows him looking somewhat overwhelmed and exhausted, sitting on the gutter, bare-chested, having dug drains to try and properly sewer the festival site. I know the movement was so much more than a festival. By the same token, do you think the festival was successful, looking back on?
I think it was wonderfully successful, given the legacy that has, you know, has come from it, and the settlement of the North Coast from the new settlers and the old settlers, and the mixing of the two. And that was early conversations between the farmers who'd lived there and done it pretty tough and new people who came in. And so much that they really learnt from each other. I guess this discussion prompted me to look back into my own archives and photo albums, and I looked back and picked up some of the photos from then. And really, it was very small. You can see that, you know, it was pretty sparsely populated around those hills. So it was small, but I guess because of the spirit and the, as Graham said, the hope and trying to change values and the way that was embraced over the years since then, that it's been very successful.
Mm. Paul, what are your thoughts?
Oh, look, of course it was a success, but I think maybe too much is attributed to it. And the thing that was most important was our relationship with Aboriginal people. We were probably the first white people to actually go and ask permission from Aboriginal people to use the land. And that has held the whole community in good stead for a long time. It's interesting that it was only 1967, just a very few years before then, that Aboriginal people were made citizens and allowed to live their own lives and not in reserves and missions. And now you go to a council meeting and the first thing they do is recognise elders. Well, that was an important, really the most important element of the Aquarius Festival as I'm concerned. But the outcomes of it have been remarkable in that it did ring a bell and attract people to move here. And it's the people who moved here and made their lives here and committed to new forms of community, new forms of healing, new forms of growing food. That's transformed this whole region. This was a totally depressed region. When we came here, we bought half the town for a song. We paid $500 for the RSL Club, $1,000 for the general store, and $1,000 for the Rainbow Cafe. It was that depressed. When we sold the shares in Tuntable Falls, I was the salesman of that, and travelled around the country selling shares for $200 a share. Land was $100 an acre. The values were so different in a lot of ways because it was such a depressed, run-out regional area. We'd finished all of the dairy, we'd finished all the timber. It was, you know, where were we going to go? So you look at it now and it's a region where we have new industries. We have an industry of arts. You know, how incredible and wonderful is that? We have a whole industry of healers. There are more healers. Anybody that's got anything wrong with them will find somebody to fix them up somewhere around here. And when you think about our efforts for earth repair, we've led the world. We're the first people in the world to rescue rainforest. And we've influenced people all over the world because of what we've done in our work for the environment. Even now with coal seam gas, we're leading the world in resistance. But the amazing thing now is we're not two communities anymore. Back then, there was this invading force of rainbow warriors, or rainbow warriors, as I prefer to call them, or ourselves. We were very worried about the state of the world. I'm incredibly encouraged to have a council like Lismore and a mayor like Jenny Dow, who would truly put everything to the people. And the referendum that she organised about coal seam gas that showed 87% of us all care about this planet makes me feel I'm living in the kind of community I really want to.
I think the legacy of Aquarius and the movement has stretched well beyond the Northern Rivers too, because you can find like-minded communities in rural areas up and down the New South Wales coast, and even in some inland centres as well, where people have gone to find a softer way of living and a way of connecting back to nature. Have you experienced that?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I had the great fortune to go to Canberra a couple of years ago as guest of the National Library. I've become a bit of a relic. They wanted to record some of my songs and then put us on in a concert in the National Library Theatreette, and it got packed out for a lunchtime concert that you know had no. I was on the ABC the day before for about half an hour, and that was the only real publicity it had. And they were surprised that you know they thought we'd get 30 people. I think about 350 turned up. So my experience out there is a real interest in. Whatever it is that we are about, we have some secret potion that other people want.
Julie, what are your thoughts about the change that you've seen in the 40 years?
Yeah, look, I'd just add to that those comments by saying that I think a number of the people from that time and who've moved up here have also found their way into the public sector and the universities and the CAE as it was back then. So really they've had an influence in innovation and creating new programs and really stepping out front. I know for myself, I was a co-founder of the AIDS Council of New South Wales up here. It was the first branch outside Sydney. And I think, you know, as services got established, people also felt the confidence to move from the cities up here because they had friends up here and they knew there were services, there was support, there was like-minded approaches, and so that enabled them to make that move as well.
So it generated a kind of critical mass in a sense.
Yes, that's right. And so the Birth and Beyond group that started in Nimbin, in Lismore over the last 10 years there's been a group running based on those foundations and principles, and through the Women's Health Centre we've recently evaluated that in collaboration with the university, and now that's published and it's evidence-based. So you sort of translate that long history and learning and knowledge into the currency of the times so that people in a wider area are able to know about it.
Paul, I noticed that you happen to bring with you a rather delightful instrument, and I'm really hoping that I can impose on you to play for us today.
Well, if I have to.
Go on.
It's of course a ukulele.
Yes, it's a localele, actually.
A localele?
Yes, built by an amazing craftsman, Michael Connor, out at Corndale. And it's all local timber. That's red cedar and bunya pine and ironwood.
Wonderful.
He's a great craftsman, and this little instrument changed my life. I can't be bothered picking up a guitar anymore. Why go for six when four will do? This is a little song that's a potted history, as I see it, of our invasion. Not really just our invasion. If you look out from Lismore to Nimbin, the shape of the hills, they hit my heart. But what I see, if you look at Blue Knob, it's the most distinguishable feature. To the right of Blue Knob is Sphinx Rock. And to the left of Blue Knob is Lillian Rock. And from up here, you can look out. And if you look at that as a continuum, it's the shape of an old Aboriginal man lying on his back. And that's how I see it anyway. I might have taken one or two substances that helped me with that vision. But I can't not see that, and it's what I've always seen. So this is a song that from the perspective of that ancient old giant. ¶¶
he's dreaming, he watches the sky. He wants to remember how it once felt to fly. And he knows that he'll find his way home by and by. While the giant lies dreaming, he watches the sky. He appeared out of nowhere from some distant time, where millions of seasons but a blink in his eye. He belongs to the land, now there's no question why. While the giant lies dreaming, he seems satisfied. Across the horizon, stretched flat on his back, he provides food and shelter, streams, rivers and tracks. And the people tread lightly and they never lack. While the giant lies dreaming, he shields and protects. Then from over the oceans, as pale as the mist, invaders and traders made their way with clenched fists. They raped and they murdered anyone who'd resist. While the giant lies dreaming, his love still persists. The settlers progressed and killed most of the trees, allowed by the empire to take what they please. But the land turned to weeds and gave them no relief. While the giant lies dreaming, but burdened with grief. How tragic it was, they could never revere, destroying so much in just 200 years. All their wars took their children and left them all in tears. Giant lies dreaming for rescue from fear. Then from over the rainbow, the children arrive with hope in their hearts and their spirits alive. Born of the land, giving back so life thrive. While the giant lies dreaming, has somebody tried turning their back on a culture of war? A new tribe arose and said, we'll take no more. We'll give back to the land and to those who came before. While the giant lies dreaming, he feels more secure. Now the giant lies dreaming, he watches the sky. As he feels people's love, his heart murmurs a sigh. He looks out for the children who grow, love and die. While the giant lies dreaming, his heart's free to fly. While the giant lies dreaming, his heart's free to fly.
Oh, thank you so much.